Hello? Oh no, she's dead.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
It's all shits and giggles till somebody dies.
No, it's not. Thanks. I'm very funny. It has been said. I do sometimes just come out with real good ones. And that was one of them. Thank you. It's not Becky again. It's me, not. Tash. That's my name. Natasha Spencer-Levy and...
Talia Augustidis.
Yay! Talia's back. Come and co-hosting with me today because Becky is in Sweden still doing Swedish things, sitting in a sauna, eating... herring or something
meats,
like that.
Yeah.
Meats and cheeses. Again, my lovely little Swedish accent. It's very just camp German, but I like it. And Becky isn't here, so she can't say anything about it. Yeah. Hope she's listening to that. Anyway, welcome to Death of Funny Business. It's 5 o'clock on a Tuesday, which means that we are talking all things death. And today we have Tanya Wilkinson in the studio to talk to us. She is a grief coach and cultural consultant and host of Death on the Daily podcast. So we're going to talk to her about her grief journey and all that lovely jazz that we love to talk about people dying. And it's going to be lovely. Talia, how are you doing? Tell me everything about your life. It's been a while.
I'm good, thank you. I am a bit tired today because I just came back from the Edinburgh Fringe. I took a 6:30 a.m. train yesterday.
Oh,
you know, one of those
wow.
decisions where you're like, oh, this is future Talia's problem.
100%.
And then it became my problem yesterday.
Oh, that's really nice.
But yeah, it was really good.
How was that 6:30 train?
You know what? It flew by because I was asleep the whole time. I put like a jumper on my head because I sleep like with my mouth wide open.
Oh, me too.
All of my friends have pictures of me sleeping, like catching flies. Mm-hmm. I think someone maybe thought I was like a celebrity and I didn't want to show my face.
Did you wear your sunglasses too?
No, I mean, they wouldn't have known I was under a big jumper.
You were under a big jumper.
It was a quick train because I literally woke up in King's Cross.
Amazing. Cool. That's kind of how you want to do it though, isn't it?
Yeah, and then I came home, slept till 4.
Oh, the dream.
Yeah.
How was Fringe?
It was amazing. It was the first time I've ever been. I was just there for a week, and I saw so many shows.
It's crazy. Like, I went the year after COVID, so like the year after the closing, and then they reopened, and it was very different. So I'd really, really like to go back again because I feel like...
Why was it different?
I just think we didn't get this. Yeah, I think we didn't get the same experience as a normal Fringe. Like, there was a lot less going on still. And it was a lot of, like, it was just everyone was still very cautious and there wasn't as much, like, crazy going on. There was a lot less people in the city as well. So I think definitely want to go back. But I've had quite a few friends up there this summer, which has been really nice. Flawless Evans, who was on the show back in the day. She took her show about grief up, which was... is really awesome, and she's had such good reviews, so that's really nice to hear. Yeah, she has a show called Yes We're Related. I don't know if you... Yes We're Related, she sold out, which is great. Well done, Flo. Snaps. She has her show up there, and
have you seen it?
We saw it here in London. We saw it at the other Palace, and it was really great. It's like it's an interesting show about this girl's mom dies, and it's about kind of her grieving process and her sister and how they're different, and it's very weird and very slightly surrealist, and there's a lot of trifle going on, but it's really funny and like, yeah, a real joy. Did you see anything fun?
I saw a few fun things. I saw something called Slugs, which was fucking hilarious. Like, if it comes to London, when it comes to London, absolutely have to see it.
I'm already like hooked at the name. I'm kind of obsessed.
And did it come up once? Like maybe once. Like,
sometimes.
it was kind of about like nihilism and meaninglessness of life and trying to avoid all of these big things that are happening in life but not being able to. But through that, it was just a very silly romp. Another one I loved was, I think it was David Elms Describes a Room, and it was kind of improv. He describes a room. I don't want to give anything more away, but I loved it.
Yeah.
And then one that was just a joy was Abby. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing her name right, but Abby Wambaugh, the first 3 minutes of 17 acts. And it was very, very silly. And basically she just would ring a bell and then do a different style of like stand-up or comedy or something.
Oh, that's
for
cool.
17 times. But then it, this is a bit of a spoiler, but it sort of crept up on you that it's all connected to this one grief story.
Oh, wow.
And it just, even if it didn't have an arc, I think it would be an amazing show.
Mm.
But the fact that you just suddenly looked back and you were like, oh, like, all of these things are related.
Yeah.
And she did that in such a funny way. Like, it was so funny.
Mm.
And then that one moment, I just was like weeping. I was like,
oh.
I think things that they like this show are able to go to the like very silly.
Mm.
And then it's like, oh, it's actually meaningful without it being like, it wasn't like, no, surprise, yeah, this means something. It was just like, it just kind of crept up on you, and then like
really,
and then she's able to like lift you back out again. It was amazing. And it felt similar to when I was on the show, I was talking about a piece I made called Dead Ends, and it it's like a composition from different moments of me grieving my mum's death, and it felt similar to that. And like, that is how grief works, is it isn't linear, it isn't structured in a
set,
and it is these very high highs and very low lows, and like it's this weird soup. Like grief soup. Get me a bowl, honestly.
Get me a bowl. Let's make badges. I want a sticker,
a big label,
which just says grief soup, welcome to grief soup.
That's awesome.
Jump in, the water's fine. And
water
salty.
Is actually fucking terrible. Get me out. I'm being boiled alive.
It's horrible. I'm dying. My skin is peeling off. I'm like a frog. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
Have you seen anything, any other shows or anything?
I haven't really. I mean, my grief, I've been feeling many feelings today. I feel like I'm just going to talk about it because it's part of my life right now. So yeah, I feel like I'm kind of grieving possibilities of love and romance that have kind of been stubbed out in the fire. Do you know what I'm saying? And I kind of, I've been not dating someone, but like date someone for a bit. And then there's just like this, you know, when you hit that point where you realize you're not on the same page, and it's very much like, oh, okay, I've kind of, I feel like we make a really good team, and there's like real, like many joyous things happening, but then you kind of face reality and you realize, oh, there's a big issue here. And then you kind of have to grieve the loss of something that's not going to be. And I think that's kind of where I'm at. And I had to have a big cry about it because I was like, oh, this is stuck in my soul. And I was like, and then obviously the one thing when you're dealing with fucking boys, boys.
Straight down the camera.
Yep, looking at you, know who you are. Because it's not, I don't have one doubt he's not listening to this. He knows who he is. Fuck you, man.
What's his full name?
No, we can't.
And national insurance number.
I actually have his credit card on file, so we can fill that in. No, but like, I think there's definitely like a level, especially when you've lost a mother as a lady, as a woman, you're like, oh God, all I really, really want to do is talk to my mom right now.
Mm.
And it's just one of those things where, oh, it's just so annoying. And I mean, I think this is the same with anyone, but I spoke to my therapist, and my therapist said I'm doing a really good job of like being very conscious in my feelings and being very like open and very, very realistic about whatever. But yeah, it's just, it's hard to like, I think it's not the same as grieving a person, but it's very much like, oh, that really sucks, and your heart hurts a little bit, and then you can kind of like carry on with your life. But
do you have like ways of getting over that are similar to grieving processes?
I think that there's definitely like, I have to have a day of like a failed situationship. You must have a day of melancholy. Look into the atmosphere with your big sad puppy dog eyes and go, oh, my life is so hard, it's so sad, why is everything so difficult, I just want to be in love. And then you wake up the next morning, you go to bed, you have a big bowl of ice cream, you go to sleep, you wake up the next morning and you go, okay, it's time to pull up your bootstraps. And then
you go on a radio show
and talk about
look
it.
At the camera and you say
boys, you. And to be honest, like, not to air shit, but like, it's the biggest thing is that like I feel really sad that someone who I can really see as like a good person doesn't want to let anyone love them. Mm. And that's really sad. I think, because I was talking about this to my, with Dr. Emily, therapist Dr. Emily. Love you, Dr. Emily.
Friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod. love of my life. My true soulmate, who I pay. I was saying to her, I was like, oh fuck, I've lost my train of thought. What was I saying? I was saying,
Boys.
Yeah, no, it's gone.
That's okay. That's
fine. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Thank you, producer Yasmin. There's like a level of like, when you can see something in someone and they don't want you, they don't want you to let them, let you love them. I'm like very aware of how short time is. I think, it's yeah. like my awareness of like, stop fucking about. You think you're going to get like some kind of experience from somewhere else. You're not. Like longevity and like when you find connection with people, don't throw it away because it's like scary. Yeah, we're all fucking scared. Are you kidding? Like we're all fucking terrified. Oh, I don't want to get hurt. Blah, blah, blah. We're all going to get hurt. Okay, that's the point of grief. That's the point of death. We're all gonna get hurt. But what are we supposed to do? Not love people? We're supposed to run away and isolate and like cry about it and just like never let anyone in. That's the most joyous part of existing is like actually having those experiences. So yeah, sorry, sir. He's like, fuck you. I just know. Yeah, it's just a tricky one. And I think when you have this understanding of how short life is, it's even more frustrating than it normally is, I think.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know, because I don't know the opposite side, but it feels so frustrating, especially, I don't know, even with friends and stuff. Like, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but like having friends who play games or like mess you about or like even apologize for their absence or something like that, I'm like, it's okay, we're living. We don't have time to like, I don't have time to be mad at people or like, yeah, I just.
That's a like good consequence of having experienced grief, I suppose.
100%. Like, I don't think I was always like this. I think definitely therapy is like the most important part of like my healing process has been like to actually unpack all of my bullshit and be like, oh no, actually I really care about living.
Not just jokes, folks. You'll get
wisdom serious sometimes. Serious wisdom from me, and I'm gonna start talking like this for the rest of the show and just feel like very very fancy lady. What about you? Any How's your grief?
She's good. Yeah, I mean, do we have time?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's okay. I think it flares up at very strange moments. I'm actually experiencing a sort of grief for a job at the moment, a thing that I've been doing for like 4 years as part of my work that I'm actually going to move on from and let go of.
Mm.
And that's been really hard to decide that actually I need to do something new and move on and give this energy to something else. Mm. And like the unknown of that is really scaring me, and every time I think about it I start crying.
Not today, Satan. But hey, at least you've like acknowledged that your energy needs to go other places.
Yeah,
and change isn't always bad.
Yeah, and I've decided that it's an event series that I help run.
Yeah.
And I haven't actually announced that publicly, I hope. Oops, no one I know is listening.
Everybody, turn off. Stop it. Don't listen. We're busy.
I think I'm going to do like the last one I'm going to do is going to be a kind of like, I'm not going to say this to everyone. I'm not going to be like, come to my wake. But to me, it's going to be like one of those fun wakes where everyone gets really drunk and it's like,
yes, we love a wake, love a funeral, love a wedding.
Exactly. So I think I'm going to do that. I think that's going to help because it's weird in normal life to do that. And luckily, because it's an event series, like I'm going to do a last event anyway and people I love will be there. And so it's actually quite nice that they don't know they're coming to my secret job funeral, secret job. But they are. But we don't do that in a usual way. No, like, if someone leaves a job or if someone gets fired, we have
little parties, but we don't do like proper, like, I think it's important. I am a big believer recently, and I never was as a kid. And I think because I was so pessimistic as a child, being like, nothing matters because my mum died. Like, I think now I'm much more like, oh my gosh, we should have a party for everything.
Yeah, I think ritual is really important. And I think in our society, it's not. Actually, that's something I did at The Fringe. Do you know someone called Julia Masley?
Mm-mm.
She's a clown and she does this show called Ha 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 Ha. And it's amazing. It's like my favourite thing I've ever seen.
I love clowning. I've been really vibing with some clowns at the moment.
And part of the show is that, I won't spoil it, but part of it is that she burns a sock on the stage and she's like, this is what we're letting go of. And she invites everyone to throw their socks and she's like, I will burn these later in a car park. And we actually went and burned them at 2 a.m. at an Aldi car park in Edinburgh. And people turned up, like 30 people were there.
Of course they did.
And it's just this very high, silly thing that we were doing, like just ridiculous. But at the same time, people took it seriously and they each got to take a sock and throw it into the fire. And she asked them what they wanted to let go of.
Mm.
And it was like some small things like pettiness or jealousy or bitterness, but it was also really big things. Someone stood up and said, I need to let go of a relationship and a creative partnership and the city of Edinburgh. I'm moving away and starting fresh. And like, I was recording it and I had to like stifle my tears because I was ruining my recording.
You're like,
Oh, wait, shit. But it was so beautiful. And I really loved the idea of like a silly ritual.
Yeah.
That also wasn't silly because we were all there together. It doesn't matter what you're doing, even if it's just burning socks in a car park at 2 a.m.
Absolutely.
Gathering together and letting go of something together, like, it does mean something.
Yeah, and it makes a difference.
And people felt so light afterwards and were, like, chatting. And then I went to walk up Arthur's Seat at 4 a.m.
My dream. Oh, love Arthur's Seat. What joy.
It was so beautiful.
Well, on that note, listeners, can you please send us in your rituals? Have you ever burnt a sock? We're going to go to a break. And Yasmin's going to find out if anyone has any opinions. Bye.
Fubar Radio. Politics uncensored.
The more alarming question is, what does this say to victims of these sorts of crimes which have been alleged on them? Essentially, what they'll be looking at is two men who have a huge online influence, who say some of the most disgusting things online and spout off some of the, I think, most dangerous sort of ideas and narratives in the online space, that they've essentially been able to travel to the US while they're still under investigation in multiple countries.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google app stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
I was fine on this beach the other day. I didn't know the time of high tide changes, and I had no idea it could come in so fast. So I'm finding out the hard way. From this fella, the Coast Guard, who dropped in to get me out.
Ready!
Before you go to the coast, check the tide times online. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Are you aware of the T-Alarm?
Tell me more.
Yeah, so it's this cultural phenomenon that we have in Britain. It's an alarm at 3 p.m. Where everybody in the UK has to have a cup of tea, and if you miss it by a certain number of minutes, you get fined, basically.
This ain't real. This is not real. This is not real. I'm not playing into this. Yeah. You think me watching Keeping Up Appearances, you think Mrs. Bouquet was missing a 3 o'clock tea alarm? Y'all won't get me.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
When I've met people in the past, I'm like, oh yeah, I really love him, he's the one. But I just knew they weren't. I'd say it, but I knew I didn't mean it. But when I met you, there was a different feeling. Like, it's like your gut just tells you. When people used to say, when you know, I was like, oh, piss off. But when you know, you know.
When I met you and times got hard, I would come up with a strategy to make it better.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
And we are back in the studio. And Hugh has said that I can't touch the microphone and it's really stressing me out. Okay, I'm fine. We are in the studio with Tanya Wilkinson. Tanya, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Tash and Talia. No. I'm so excited for this conversation.
I'm very excited too. Do you want to just, should we just jump straight in? Do you want to tell us why you're here and all about your journey
to
this space with Death Funny Business?
Oh, well, this show really resonates with me, particularly with my journey, and also the fact that it's very reverent and uncensored, which is spot on.
We try. We try really hard.
I love that. So I definitely came from a death avoidance space. Mm-hmm. My family is very much... I refer to certain people in my family as malfunctioning robots when it comes to talking about death and grief. So there's just a little bit of glitching and then disappearing from the room as quickly as possible. So that was my experience growing up. And for example, when it came to pets dying and all of those rites of passage, again, it was very much, we move on as quickly as possible and don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. Now, as we know, death and grief eventually finds us. Mm. It's a universal experience. And for me, actually, it found me later on in my 30s. So I didn't experience the death of anyone who was really, really close until I hit my late 30s. And then in the space of a year, my granddad died. And then our daughter, Ngako Rayuna, whose name means lioness heart,
such a beautiful
in my husband's Maori language. So she came into the world very soon after my granddad died, as can quite often happen in this life and death cycle. And it was a much wanted pregnancy, so I'd had a early miscarriage I think it was about a couple of years before, which actually the grief of that catalyzed me leaving a very big job in the sport of Formula One.
We've heard Yasmin, our producer, is like the biggest fan of Formula One, so when she told me, I was like, oh my gosh, they're gonna be best friends.
Oh, Yasmin, we need to talk.
Yes, producer Yas is like
yes, for sure. And in that way, death is very transformational, so it really catalyzed that moment. My granddad died, and then that catalyzed me deciding actually to go into the death and grief space. So I trained to become an end-of-life doula, and straight after I finished that training, I then became pregnant. And thought, okay, well, now's not the time that I really want to be thinking about death and grief. But it then unfortunately found me during that pregnancy. Mm. So our beautiful, darling daughter, it was 20 weeks into pregnancy, had the scan. By then I thought, through the woods, 12 weeks, come on, it's all going to be fine. And actually what happened was she had a birth defect that basically meant she couldn't survive outside of the womb. So the most devastating, heart-wrenching experience that anyone could ever have to go through. And actually I realized one of my deepest fears that was passed down to me from my mum, and I'm sure my alma mater, my mum, and all down that line, was really around losing children. So I actually had to really face that fear.
And it's something that's not talked about even like that. I think even to the point where like we have conversations about grief, I think miscarriage and child loss is something that is so silent because it's so... I think it's just such a big fear, especially like for women. I think it's just such a big fear. And
Even the idea that, you know, you're not meant to tell people you're pregnant until 3 months.
Yeah, I mean...
There's a little idea in that because people shouldn't know you've experienced a miscarriage. And the assumption is that it should be a secret. And obviously it should be yours to choose to tell.
Yeah, 100%.
But...
It's like, why are we not telling people? We're not telling people because that's the thing to do. Because
it's shame.
Yeah, because like if you do have a miscarriage, it's like, oh, it's just going to be better if nobody knows.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. And then we can and just, and you can just private? Deal with it like on your own. Yeah. I just think that's crazy. Anyway.
It is. I totally, totally agree with you. Especially because those are the moments when you need your community, you need 100%. People around you.
Even if you don't want them there. So sometimes it's better to have told and for people to find out because you might not offer that information willingly. Yeah. But people need to know that you need extra support even if you're not comfortable.
Definitely.
Saying that.
Definitely.
And in terms of, you know, you did this death doula training. What was that like and what were some of the learnings that you took on when you went through this loss of your own?
The biggest learning was really meeting myself exactly where I am, and also actually a really interesting learning that is a real catalyst in my own story beyond is I remember them telling us that until whoever it is that's dying takes their final breath, that they are very much still alive. So actually it's what can you do to really enjoy the moment with them? And for me, with our story with our daughter, it was, I was in the car on the way back from the scan and I was obviously in shock, completely devastated, bawling my eyes out. And to the point around community and telling other people, one of my friends who I just messaged called me and said, you can get through this, because I was saying to her, I'm gonna die. This is my final moment.
I'm good. I'm going.
Yeah, that's it. I can't get through this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she said, you can. And I said, but how do you know? She said, because I've been through the same. And I was like, wow.
And you didn't know?
No. So again, it shows all of the unspoken. But even that just gave me that rooting into my resilience. Yeah. And then it was literally just after I hung up the phone to her, I felt my daughter kicking. And that, she brought me back into presence. And I made a promise to her that I was going to be by her side no matter what. Because I realized, and it's not, I always talk about presence with a very trauma-informed lens, that sometimes our body just wants to check out and it needs to, and that's what we need in that moment. That is shock, and our body is doing the best job for us. But actually, for me, it was almost my daughter called me back into presence, and there was something so powerful in just acknowledging you're here and you're literally alive and kicking right now. I've got about 3 or 4 days with you, so how can we, it's going to be raw, it's going to be painful.
Yeah.
But how can I be present with you? And how can we just bring in a little bit of ritual to honor you? And within that, there was dancing, singing to her. We crafted loads of rituals. My husband and then the fellow doulas who I trained with, they helped me to write the birth and death plan. And so nice. All of these beautiful little moments that just anchored me into, okay, I can honor her now and I can honor her after she's gone. And there's a continuation of her. She will live on through me for the rest of my life.
That's beautiful.
And did you, I think that's really interesting and important, because a lot of the time from experiences I've heard of, not my own, but that some, like, these experiences of miscarriage or stillbirth, they can be very clinical and become very hospital, medical. We are going to do this, that's it. I think especially with our health service as well, there's such a lack of connection. Like, do you think that having those rituals and having, I mean, obviously you've said it helped you connect with your daughter. Do you think that that is something that it works for everyone? Do you think it's something that we need to be putting in place always?
I think I'm not always, there's a choice to it. And I fully respect if there's any parents who say, do you know what, I'm just going to get through this.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, because at the stage that we were at, it was termination for medical reasons.
Okay.
Then it was induction and stillbirth.
Yeah.
So it was,
that's a lot.
You think of that and you go, oh my goodness, that is horrendous. Like, again, how will I get through it?
Yeah.
But actually to that point around the conversations, there wasn't that wrapper of, actually, have you considered there are these little rituals, or you could meet your baby, they did, to be fair to the bereavement midwives, they did say you could meet your baby, spend time with your baby, and we'll do whatever you want. But there wasn't those little suggestions that I got by virtue of being in this group of fellow doulas who I just trained with, of which two of them had had stillbirths at full term. So they were the ones who stepped in and then said, here's some thoughts on things that really work for me. Make it your own. So we really rooted into my husband's Maori culture. I'm half Sri Lankan, so then it was also, okay, what are the Hindu end of life and death rituals, and how
what were some of those, like Maori and Sri Lankan? That's such an interesting spectrum of grieving. I wonder, were there specific ones that you chose?
Yeah, so on the Hindu side, there's, and again, this is not, if anyone's listening, probably like, you didn't do it exactly.
You didn't do it right.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're going to get comments being like, excuse me, you didn't do this part right. So actually, I shouldn't be talking about it. It's like, nah, no, fuck you.
Yeah. This is my, like, spiritual sort of in the middle version of it. But it was sandalwood oil. I was reading about that and anointing her body. We actually chose to not have her cremated, so there was a woodland burial.
Lovely.
But that is very much an alignment in Māori culture. It's about the burial, and there's a beautiful, this was for her burial, there's a lovely Māori tradition. It's more for the mourners, actually, but where there's a tree called kawakawa. And a bit like, I think, like the weeping willow, it's got kind of quite bendy branches, so they wear crowns of these beautiful branches with the leaves. And we've got a willow tree in our garden that I always connect in with and have a little conversation with every day. So I made her a little crown because I thought, I was thinking about my family would be like, why are you wearing this crown?
It's like, because we're all freaking fairies and we want to be with the trees, okay? Don't ask questions. Just go with it.
But then it's also looking at the forwards path. So her little siblings haven't come in. Hopefully they will do at some point. Yeah. But actually, even in the forwards path, then I was thinking about the traditions, and I thought, actually, every year on her birthday, which is the 2nd of September, for us to make our own willow crowns and to, like, dance around the garden and just create these little moments.
Yeah, 100%.
And there was a marigold garland as well. There was a little street marigold that I was watching growing through the crack in the pavement just after she died. And I said to it, please just give me a lot of flowers on the day of her woodland burial. And there was 11 little blooms. So I took 7 of them, left a few for the little bumblebees.
The bumblebees.
And then made the marigold garland that you also see in the Hindu custom. And loads and loads of stuff of just understanding how can we connect into our cultures to really root us in this moment.
Yeah. I love the idea also of if you do have other children, not leaving her behind. You know, you bring her with you and you make them a part of her journey too, and you make them aware of her in a way that they're involved in, and it's not this like hidden thing, or it's not this like overly present thing that they can't live up to or anything. It's just incorporating them into the process of grief, because they will also be grieving her in a different way, but they will there's no way that won't be a part of their lives, so it's better to invite it in in a ritualistic way.
100%. I do sometimes smile thinking about the conversations that they would have at school. You know, is draw the picture of your family and they're like, oh, you've got a big sister.
And this one.
So this pile of flowers
let
here.
Let me explain something to you. I literally had the same experience. I was 7 when my mum passed and doing all of that. I mean, I don't know if you had a similar experience of like being, and this, and everybody, just so everybody knows, my mummy's in heaven. And everyone being like, what? And then you're like, I am just a very clever 7-year-old who has a broad understanding of how life and death works. And you lot, I'm about to blow your little minds. About to blow your tiny minds.
Mine was just like, oh, there's these really sad drawings of like, dad, daughter, daughter, mum all the way up here.
With the wings.
Oh.
But I do think that there's definitely a conversation about creating something that's more joyous than mum at the top of the picture with wigs, like 100%, like the flower crowns, and that's so, it's such a beautiful thing to do for someone. And I think we were talking about
rituals
and God, it's a ritual show today.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
Theme.
We've got a theme, everybody. And we were talking about how even things like leaving jobs and the grief you kind of find from that, and why we don't spend more time ritualizing things. And it's very interesting. Do you feel like as you have moved through this journey of grief, do you feel like you've become more aware of creating those rituals in your life for other things? Or has it been, are we still on that main path at the moment?
Definitely. Rituals are so, so important. It's a real anchoring. And I also am a grief coach now in this journey, as it's all opened up. So I've stepped away from the death doula stuff.
Yeah.
In fact, it never really started because of losing our daughter. But it's really, for me, there's such power when we can tend to those endings. And to your point, Tash, actually, there's many endings in life. I grieved when I left Formula One.
Yeah.
And it was only my friend, she's an acupuncturist, and she put the needles in the lung points, which are just...
You're like...
I screamed, and she went, what are you grieving? And I thought, and I felt in my body, because I almost connect into like my daughter is right over my heart.
Yeah.
My miscarriage is like in another, the early miscarriage is in another part of my chest. My granddad's over here. And I connected and I was like, nah, it's not my, the miscarriage isn't humming. So what is it? And she said, could you be grieving Formula One? And I was like, no.
You're kidding me.
I handed my notice in. I was skipping out of that door, so happy to have a break. And then I went, no, I am. There was a 14-year corporate career that was in the entertainment industry. There was also the part of me that in my teens, that was my dream. And for me, that was the only path that I was ever going to walk. So there was also that letting go. But I hadn't allowed for that. So actually from that point onwards, these little rituals became really, really important of how can I honour in any moment what's coming up that's difficult. And I think when it is difficult, just bringing that little bit of meaning in. For me, it's like get out in nature, gather some flowers, create a little altar.
Yeah.
If it's a part of me, maybe it's like a little pictures or whatever it is to represent. Or like the Formula One altar was all my old, the grid passes. And then all the way back to my, I worked in the music industry when I first came out of uni and stuff. So all the like, the gig tickets and all of that stuff, awesome. Just going back through those memories and creating a little moment to say, actually, this is just a mini funeral for that part of me.
Another mini funeral. We have another mini funeral. We were just talking about this, about Talia, you're having an experience that's pretty much the same.
Wow. It's quite hard, quite hard to explain, but just doing anything, and it doesn't need to make sense to anyone, but just doing something that's ritualistic to let go of something can be so powerful and personal.
And you, so now you're a grief coach.
Yes.
And that is this your full, your full-time is grief coaching now?
Not completely full-time.
Not completely, but that's your your that's stuff at the moment.
That's my heartland. Do that. I've got a podcast on death.
Yes, so. Talk to us about the podcast as well.
Yeah, so it's called Death on the Daily. And it's all about exactly as you're doing. Just bring, let's bring these conversations out there and let's just talk about it in any and all of the ways that, that death and grief show up for us in life. And actually, we do speak a lot to not just losing those who we love. That's obviously a very important part of it. But then also that side of career change. I had a former Olympian on who was talking actually about the fact that when she... when she retired from athletics, that had been her since she was nine.
Yeah.
And at that point, she was late 30s. And again, I think she described it, she was on a different podcast, that felt like she'd been pushed off of a cliff.
Yeah.
Because you're not prepared for it. So a lot of these conversations feel so, so important for us just to be able to understand actually when it's difficult and there's a real messy middle when we're navigating this. But actually, if we can just lean in and go through it, it's so much more powerful. So that's really my mission is how can we be just more present. Again, with that trauma-informed caveat, we can't always be present. But how can we just touch that which is difficult just a little bit?
And is there a way, you talk about presence, are there any literal methods for how to invite presence in? Like, I don't know, meditation or, what kind of things? If you're like, oh, I'm feeling like I'm not present right now, how do you, how would you advise someone be present?
Yeah, or Tashi said it, it's a toolkit. So building your own personal toolkit, and different things resonate with different people. I'm a big meditator, but also I know that in our busy lives for so many of us, we don't have time to really, for example, when I was in Formula One, forget about meditating 2 times 20 minutes a day. When am I going to do that? I think I just about managed to fit in 10 minutes if I was lucky. So a big part of it is around what works for you. What can you do in the micro? As well as in the bigger moments. So, for example, when I was in Formula One, I would find present. I remember being in the paddock, which is like the backstage area of Formula One. And I was just stood looking up at the sky. There was a, like a little bird going over. And one of the broadcast guys comes over and is like, you're right, T, what's going on? Are you okay? I think he literally thought, because it was a very stressful having day. I think he was like, have we just completely lost her?
She's cracked.
someone in to help her. And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just reconnecting. But I find nature really powerful. So wherever you go, there's like, just looking outside of this beautiful view from the studio, there's a tree there. So even just being able to say, I'm just going to take a moment to just connect into that beautiful tree. The fractals or whatever it is that I'm seeing that are there, and just take a deep breath in. And even that just for a few seconds can be really, really powerful to just bring yourself back in, or just feeling your feet on the earth, putting your hand to your heart is another really powerful one. So there's these little practices that you can ease yourself into or just fit into any busy day alongside then, if it's meditation or if it's breath work or it might be a bit of movement. Bit of yoga or something that just helps to drop you back into your body.
That's quite impressive that you noticed that tree, because it is a very industrial view.
It's very industrial.
I was like, what's she going to find in this view?
The big, big ass tree, Talia.
There's always, I tell you, if you look. There's
something somewhere.
There's always nature. So I'm obsessed with plants growing through the cracks in pavement.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. I love that shit.
Always. There's always something. Even when you're going through Kensington or places where you know they've got the weed killer out.
That,
even
those pavements are clean.
Yeah.
They'll find their way through.
I wondered, because I feel like you're very optimistic and very positive person. I wonder if you have dealt with cynicism or feeling pessimistic about life and how you've dealt with that, because it feels like from knowing you for the last 10 minutes, I feel like I've got this vibe of very much like having this positive outlook and trying to like reframe everything, which is so commendable. I just think that I wonder when you've dealt with that feeling of like, I'm done. How do you get out of there? Like, what's kind of like, obviously there's the ritualization and everything, which is amazing, but has there been like a moment where those feelings have felt overwhelming? Because I know for me that was the biggest part for so long. It's like me just feeling like pessimistic about everything, and I wonder just what's your take on that.
Oh yes, all the time. So I am in a good mood today, but that is not always. And even if I look, so it's our daughter's birthday next week.
Yes,
and actually it's interesting, last year was her first birthday, this year's her second. And the grief always hits at random points, as we know. So for me it was 2 weeks ago, it hit me like a truck. But also compounded then with the journey of, will her siblings come in? So that question that's always there. So there's been many, many moments. And in everything that I do, it's really about, it's not because I hate toxic positivity and that thing of, we can reframe our way out of any situation. Whereas actually for me, it's around, are there little breadcrumbs of joy that we can find that can alongside. Help to anchor us? But actually that might be on a really crap day, just saying to myself, do you know what? I'm going to really enjoy some lovely food. I'm going to sit outside with a cup of tea. I'm still going to feel absolutely wretched. But for me, in that practice of presence, it's about meeting yourself exactly where you are. And I think that for me is the truth of any meditation, any mindfulness or anything. It's not true mindfulness or being present with yourself if you're trying to gloss over that which is difficult. So it's ultimately listening to yourself. And also I've got a very strong programming of busyness. So last year, what I noticed was around Ngākuraona's birthday, I packed my calendar with clients, with catching up with friends, with different projects and stuff that I could have just spread out. Even launching my podcast, I decided to launch that a few weeks before. I was like, let's go. And let me fill the schedule with all these interviews. And I was having therapy and my therapist mirrored that to me. And I was like, oh my goodness. So I knew I just had to clear my calendar and I had to just be. And in being, that meant bawling my eyes out. It meant the times where I felt wretched, where I felt anger, where I also felt a lot of shame as a mother, for example, who still hasn't got her living children on this planet. 5 years, I hate the word trying, but I was like, it's kind of like whenever I hear the word trying, I'm like, yeah, I'm trying really hard.
You're trying really hard. We're like having sex all the time, guys. Yeah.
So it's sort of, it's that. I think it's just that of, on any given day, where are you? Like, what's coming up for you? And actually, if you can just touch that just a little bit, it can be really, really powerful. And just observe as well. My headphones are slipping off the back of my head. I think I must have gestured too much just then.
Just but also, the
if you can just honor yourself. For me, I always use that word of just honoring yourself, grace and compassion, because we're human. And for me, a big part of this death and grief work is coming back to our human wholeness, which means we're going to feel wretched at points. That's a part of this human existence. And if we numb it, it's still there. It's just lurking in the shadows and ultimately pulling the strings, even though you're not conscious to what's actually happening.
Ash, do I have time for another question?
Yes, please, by all means.
I was wondering for people around you, or do you have advice for people whose friends or whose family or whose loved ones are experiencing grief in some way? Because I know it's also hard for them of knowing, should I ask more questions? Is that question too difficult to answer? How can I be there? How can I be present for them? So do you have any advice for those people?
Good question. It's such an important question, isn't it? I would say it's just meeting the person, loved one, friend, colleague, or just sometimes we encounter people where, I don't know, you might be sat next to them on a plane and just having a little conversation can truly change their life.
That's so weird. I did this the other day. I went to Spain and I sat down next to someone and I was like, how you doing? And they were like, yeah, good. And then he was like an old fella, like an old man. And then he was like, I was like, what you been doing? I was like, why are you getting on this plane? And then he was like, oh, well, I'm going on a cruise. I was like, okay. I was like, why? He was like, my wife's already there. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then he said, oh, I've just been at a funeral. And I was like, funny you should say.
Oh, there you go.
Funny. And then we had a whole chat about it. And then he was like, yeah, mum died. And I was like, I was like, oh, that sucks. And then he was like, yeah, it does. And then we had a whole conversation about it. And I think he did that thing, you know, when people go like, I've got to tell you that, like, I went to a funeral and now I'm, like, really sad. I have to tell you that I had to go to a funeral. Mm. And then you go, oh, no, that's okay. Like, tell me more about that funeral. What was your mum like? And then he was like, oh, she was cool. And I was like, great. And then we chatted for ages. His name was Michael. Shout out, Michael.
Oh, Michael.
Get him on the pod next
Thanks,
week.
Thanks, Michael.
Oh, it's such a beautiful thing of just, I'm listening. That's it. That's all we need to do is just, I'm here, I'm listening. Or sometimes it's not even I'm listening. It's I'm just going to sit with you if you want to talk. You talk, I'm going to give you that listening ear. I'm not going to try and fix. That's the thing we need to resist, is jumping in and saying, oh, well, things are going to be better. Or this is how you could look on the bright side. Or all of, no, just if they want to bawl their eyes out, if they get completely snotty and messy, just go with them and try and meet them where they are.
Yeah, for sure.
But also sometimes it might just be sitting in silence. The most powerful presence that I had from my loved ones was my cousin who just came around and she's like, because at that point I think I said I was just swearing at the trees in the forest and kicking piles of dirt. She's like, we can do that and then we'll just sit in silence.
Yeah.
So it was just that, of just sitting in silence, me in absolute shock, and then swearing and kicking stuff. And that was all that I needed in that moment. I didn't need anything else because you can't fix it.
Mm.
And actually in just listening, that's often what we need, is someone who's not going to be like, oh my goodness, what did you just say? or for me as a bereaved mother, often I feel like it's sometimes people think it's contagious. Like if speak about it, then it's gonna, I don't know, infect them in what their future plans for pregnancy and stuff like that. But actually it's death isn't contagious, or grief isn't contagious. So it's just about how can we it's leaning in.
Grief isn't contagious, people. Thank you, Tanya, so much for coming in today. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, it's been
amazing. I wish you all the best for your grief counselling and your podcast. I can't wait to get along and follow. So thank you so much. We're going to go to a break. And thank you, Tanya.
Thank you so much.
FUBAR Radio. That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Let's go back to the beginning. A mortgage advisor. What does a mortgage advisor do?
So the main purpose of a mortgage advisor is to help you to achieve the best possible mortgage solution on time and first time. Typically, in the modern day, it's somebody who's going to hold your hand through the full home buying process, liaising with solicitors, estate agents, helping with insurance, and being in your corner on your team to make sure you achieve that goal.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
One in five people in the UK are disabled, and it's not always visible. So if we've made ourselves at home in priority spaces on the bus or train, surrounded by our shopping bags or bikes, we could be making it harder for the people who need that space more than us. So let's not forget about the people we share our journeys with, and keep priority spaces clear for others. Remember, it's everyone's journey.
What the Hell with Georges Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
Up now is Efren Mason-Clark, professional footballer. You got the chance to work under Frank Lampard. Just tell me a little bit about him.
The first day he came in, it was just like, the word isn't starstruck, but it's just like, this is the legend in not just English football, but football in the whole world. So at the start, you know, it was more of like, wow. And then it's like, you just switch off from being a fan to, this is like the gaffer now.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We are joined by Miss Safia. If I could produce you a salt, what is he like on paper? Sound like we're on Love Island.
Okay, on paper, my type has to have a good soul, good purpose and calm energy. I'm in my energy era where you've just got to come in and make me happy. I don't need you for anything. I want to find happiness and I need him to be kind.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Yay! What a lovely show. Tanya, what is such a sweet angel.
Yeah, she was amazing.
Lots of chats about rituals today, Talia. What have you got any? Personal ones? I want to know your deep personal secrets.
I'm trying to think. I mean, grief-wise, for my mum on her birthday and Mother's Day, and sometimes the day she died, we will go to her grave. That's a pretty classic one.
Nice.
But I don't know. Finish. Do you have any?
We light a candle for mum on her birthday and her anniversary, which is quite nice. We've had the same candle since 2007.
Really?
It's a big candle, but I get but I get a bit nervous about it because I'm like, I suppose we only burn it once a year.
Yeah, you're like quickly
twice
out.
Twice a year. But it does stress me out because it is getting smaller and it just, that I guess that's interesting
that's
because it
kind of
like
though.
Panics me that I'm like, okay, what do we do if the candle runs out?
What kind of candle is it?
It's this really big white candle and it has wrapped around the outside. It's got like little drawings of flowers.
Mm. I wonder if you could make it into a ritual itself to refill it.
Ooh.
Like to get some wax and refill it together.
Can you do that? Can you refill it? Can you rewax?
I'm sure you can.
Yeah, you probably can.
But I don't know. It's also quite beautiful to have this physical symbol of your grief over the years, like going down.
Interesting.
That's lovely.
I'm feeling very... have a lot of feelings right now. I feel very peaceful, but also slightly melancholy. I feel as though I want to kind of relook at
your behavior. We're here to talk about your behavior,
Tash.
I'm
so naughty. This is the thing. I just can't stop thinking about this damn microphone. I've been told I have to sit still, and the ADHD is too real. Anyway, I think I want to kind of relook at some of my time and how I spend. How I spend it and re-ritualizing. I kind of want to burn some socks, Talia.
Burn some socks. That's the lesson from today.
I think we should.
Burn your socks.
Burn
everyone.
Your socks. But don't burn your good socks. Burn your bad socks.
Well, maybe it's more important to burn your good socks.
Maybe it is, Talia.
Let go.
What are you up to for the rest of the week?
I'm about to go play my final of a netball match.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is why below here, shorts.
It all makes sense. Tali's been stressed about her little sporty shorts.
No, I'm not going to show my unshaved
like,
legs.
I've been so scared about them all day, but now I'm going to show my butt to the world.
What about you?
Wait, so you're doing a netball final. Are you feeling ready? Are you excited?
Well, last netball final, I like fucked my foot so badly. It was literally first minute of play. Landed on it badly, was out. It was so embarrassing.
Okay, so
and then we won and I couldn't take any credit for it. I was like, yeah.
You were like, oh, I'm so
but like,
happy.
Hobbling. Fuck. Yeah, it was really embarrassing.
So let's not do that. Let's burn some socks and put into the universe that Tali's not going to hurt herself.
Yeah, exactly.
Great.
I don't want to let go of my ability to walk today.
And you're going to be back next week as well.
Yeah.
We're doing a two in a row. So Becky will be back the week after and we'll be back to normal scheduling. But Tali and I will be back next week. And, we're going to talk all things grief again, as per usual.
It's going to be a full sock show.
Do you just know what? I think we should. I think we should do a live burning. Let me know, Yaz.
Fubar.
Anyway, have the best week, and we will see you next week. God bless. Death of Funny Business. Bye-bye.